Something we didn't talk about last time we spoke, and I think I may have overlooked this, but I wanted to mention it today, was that last month you announced some funding to extend dementia training, education and support. In fact, over $40 million worth of funding, which is great.
Yeah, look, and it's really important in the context of how we continue to improve services we're providing for old Australians in aged care. And there's about 450,000 Australians who we estimate have a diagnosis of dementia, but in residential aged care it's about half. So ensuring that people have the skills to understand the work that they're doing, but also to support services with some of the programs that we have is really important. So Dementia Behaviour Management Advisory Service, Severe Behaviour Response Teams, and also some capacity around needs-based assessment for specialist dementia care program. All of those things are funded through this program, which is an extension of existing funding so that it gets us out beyond the Royal Commission, which will make some more recommendations around dementia care, I'm sure, but really important aspects to ensure that people who are unfortunate enough to have a diagnosis with dementia,
it doesn't always
have access to appropriate service.
It's not always age people that are affected by dementia. It can affect people of any age.
Look, that's right, and it's something that we're learning so much more about this disease. Unfortunately, some younger people are affected by dementia as well, and it can be extremely difficult. But one of the really good things that I've seen in the last couple of years in particular is the increasing engagement of people who do have dementia in the construction of the programs that are being offered to support them and the programs that there to help provide their care. So a lot more engagement and a change in attitude to the way that we're looking at this as a condition. Because a lot of people who have dementia have said to me and the support programs that work with them that there is a real tendency for people to effectively lose their voice once they have a diagnosis. And they still have perspectives, they still have important views, and these programs can assist with making sure that that's heard.
Yeah, there's such a lot we don't know about it too, isn't there? Today you announced an aged care voluntary industry code of practice. First of all, my question would be, why do we need one? I would have thought that the regulations in place, and obviously following on from recommendations of the Royal Commission into aged care, there would be fairly strong guidelines already in place.
Look, this is a voluntary tool that's been developed by the sector itself, which is really good. It was one of the recommendations of a review into building the workforce called A Matter of Care that was released a couple of years ago. And so it was released by the Aged Care Workforce Industry Council last Friday. And it has some really important elements. And what's really pleasing for me is that there's been strong take-up from the sector already in signing up to the voluntary code, but importantly, some of the tools that it brings in ensuring high quality care. But one of those elements is also increasing a continuous improvement in that care. So some really good principles in how care is delivered by the sector, and it was really good to see some of the providers who had already signed up to the code that were at the launch on Friday, along with Professor John Pallares, who was the author of the A Matter of Care report a couple of years ago. So good to see some action coming out of that process, basically being driven by the sector, which is important given that they're the key providers of or employers of people in the aged care
sector. So this will work hand in hand with the regulations and the laws that are going to be enacted rather than replacing them?
Well, it picks up the principles, so any changes that are made to the current system will enable them to be blended into any new process. It talks about the quality standards and a number of principles around the provision of care. 7 principles are incorporated into the code. And as I indicated, importantly, it talks about continuous improvement. So as those things change, they can be incorporated into the way that the code operates.
Okay, now moving along, if you can take off your aged care hat and put your sports minister hat on, you've just announced only recently, in fact, the appointment of a new chair of the Australian Sports Commission.
Yes, and look, it's a really important position and announcement, and I was really delighted that we've been able to announce Josephine Sukkar as the new chair. It's the first female chair of the Sports Commission, someone who has a considerable background in industry, but also a close connection with sport as the chair of Women's Rugby Australia. During that period of time, obviously, the women's rugby's become a part of, become an Olympic sport.
Yeah.
Of course, we won a gold medal at the last Olympics. So, great to see that occurring, and I'm really looking forward to working with Josephine and all of that she brings from a range of perspectives to sport. It's an important decision, and obviously, the Australian Sports Commission plays a significant role in the leadership of elite sport, but also participation of sport in Australia. And so she's been working in all of those areas, particularly in rugby. Really pleased to see her on board, and a very strong level of support to the announcement that we made last week.
And it's appropriate this year, of course, being the 40th anniversary of the Australian Institute of Sport, or the AIS. Both you and I, Richard, are old enough to remember when it was founded. It was after a very dismal performance in the 1980 Moscow Olympics. I don't think we got a single gold medal, did we, that year?
That's correct. There was no gold medals at the 1980 Moscow Olympics. It was pretty tough, and members of parliament on both sides of the political aisle were very determined that that didn't take place. A lot of the development work occurred post that process, and Malcolm Fraser, when he opened the AIS in 1981, said, "You know, this is a turning point for us," and it has been, and it's been wonderful to see the AIS grow from an organisation that had a relatively small number of athletes looking after a few sports to being one that now has, through the National Institute Network, about 2,200 athletes working through that network at any one time, all supporting them in their endeavours to represent Australia or to play sport at the best possible level.
It'd be fair to say the AOS has been a huge success, and I know it was based loosely on what happened in some communist countries prior to the wall coming down in the Iron Curtain, and they were all state-run, you know, and we know they were using drugs, of course, but we took all the good points out of them and not the bad ones, I think.
Yeah, and look, it's continued to evolve. It's not what it was when it started, and you talk to athletes and things like the decentralisation of the organisation is things that they really welcome. So, you know, I think it's played a really important part in our national success in sport, and you have various elements spread around the country, cycling in South Australia. We saw the...
Yeah, which I still maintain should have been in Launceston, but that's the thing of the past.
Yeah, look, I think there's a few Tasmanians that probably share that view. It was great to see the men's and women's rowing team down here in Tassie about this time last year when it wasn't okay for them to be training in the smoke in Canberra and in Sydney. So the women on the Tamer and the men up at Lake Barrington, and I can tell you, I was talking to their coach the other day, they thought it was fantastic to be up at Barrington. In fact, the national championships are down here again this year, so yes. Which is great to see after a period of time. But you know, the AIS, a really important organisation for us, and we ought to recognise the success that it's assisted our athletes.
Yep.
With over the last 40 years.
And as you say, it might be headquartered in Canberra, but its tentacles reach far and wide across the country, and I like that policy of decentralisation.
Look, I was talking to Ian Thorpe about it because, you know, there's issues around what we do in the context of redeveloping the campus in Canberra and what it should be, what it should do as the headquarters of the AIS. And he said that one of the most, from his point of view, as an athlete, one of the most important things was the decentralisation and into that National Institute network. And we saw just at the weekend, a Tasmanian running third in the National Road Cycling Championships based out of the Tasmanian
Scott Bowden, of course, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So it was great to see Scott do so well through the National Road Cycling Championships and proudly wearing the colours of the Tasmanian Institute of Sport, which is an important part of that National Institute network with the AIS.
Yeah, it's been a fantastic success story. Richard, thanks very much for your time as always today. I really appreciate it. Nice to catch up with you, and we'll talk to you again in a fortnight.
Thanks very much, Martin.